we have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade route.
Lee Oswald has been shot.
Paddock fired out of two adjoining rooms using a device similar to a hammer to smash the windows.
Several flying saucers there of extraterrestrial origin.
Digging Chris Graves.
Hey, welcome back to Digging Chris Graves. I am said Chris Graves, and I have Ron Lane from the Wicked Planet podcast, in which I was very lucky to be a guest about a week and a half ago, I think.
Yeah.
Well, welcome, Ron.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Hey, I want to apologize for my attire. I had to sneak up from the shop because I had a really busy day. I was doing a bunch of welding today, and I'm like, it's actually pretty warm up here. So I'm like, well, this is what you get.
And you're in New Hampshire and I'm in Massachusetts, not too far from you. And yeah, it is kind of toasty outside.
Yeah, it's nice. Finally. Yeah. I like it.
And I lost a battle with a lawnmower. So that's what my attire is right now. So I appreciate you taking the time, and sorry about starting late. I apologize about that.
Yeah, no biggie.
But for those who are not familiar, tell us a little bit about the Wicked Planet and how you got into the podcasting game to begin with.
Well, the Wicked Planet is a show that I started a little over 2 years ago. And I got involved in podcasting. I used to do radio spots for some radio stations in New Hampshire. And I was always told, oh, you got a good voice for radio. And I said, well, I definitely have a good voice for it, but I don't know, you know, thank God it's radio, right? But here we are live streaming. but anyways, I just happened into being a guest on a podcast that's pretty popular called The Dangerous World. They invited me to come on and talk about conspiracies right at the beginning of COVID. Like, I want to say probably in April or May of 2020.
Early on in their lockdown.
Yeah, way early. Yeah. So I ended up doing a bunch of shows with them. I want to say probably 30, 40 shows with them or something like that. And then that progressed to going on other podcasts that were friends with that show and so on and so forth. So I had quite a bit of experience going into when I decided to do my own show, right? Because I am making appearances all over the place and everybody's like, you got to start your own show.
Yeah.
I'm like, so I don't know. I just, you know, I wasn't really ready for it. I didn't really have the equipment for it or whatever. So I put together a ragtag setup and got myself started. I have a co-host that goes by the name of Buckley, and I hijacked him. He was one of my customers at my business, and we just got talking one day, and he was telling me how his brother was a ghost hunter, and I said, yeah, well, I go on podcasts once in a while, go check them out. I said, I'm thinking about starting my own podcast. Well, that conversation led into one thing into another, and it took us a couple of months to kind of get our fingers out of our butts to do that, but we ended up starting a Wicked Planet, and we've been doing it ever since. So yeah, it's cool. So my podcasting persona is Ron from New England.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of people might already be familiar with that, but if not, you are now. So, but that's what it is. So we have it's kind of a conspiracy comedy show.
Yeah.
You know, we don't try to take too much seriously. Although we do touch on some pretty serious subjects. But we like to interject a little comedy into it and whatever. It all depends on what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, it's always different when I go on other shows or when I do a show by myself. Right. Like if you go on the Wicked Planet feed, you'll see there's regular episodes that are numbered. And then I have bonus episodes. And the bonus episodes, I do those just me and a guest. Like the episode that you and I did together was a bonus episode.
Yeah.
Which is doing very well. by the way.
I know. I saw you mentioned that.
Yeah. Yeah. People are liking it. Yeah.
Very pleased with that.
Yeah.
Well, you're also a you've been on Tinfoil Hat with Sam Tripoli quite a few times too, right?
Actually, I went on with Sam on Tinfoil one time, and but I had gone on with Sam on his Only Conspiracies shows.
Oh, okay,
yeah. And then I was on Tinfoil, and of course that's where I found you, was on Tinfoil. So I had an interesting show one day. I think I'm probably going to be going back on some point this year. Not really sure.
That's awesome. But,
that's always a fun time.
Yeah, no, Sam was pretty adamant that we get together at some point. So yeah. I'm glad that he was, and he mentioned that. What was I going to say? You also have like a network, right, of New England-based podcasts, too, that I'm fascinated with, and I hope to become a part of it.
Yeah, well, no, you already are a part of it. So we have quite a circle of podcasters in based out of New England.
Yeah,
and we keep adding to that. Now, a lot of the podcasts in my circle, WikiPlanet circle, is actually very big. It goes all the way to the West Coast, to Australia, to England.
Wow.
So we have a really, really big circle for sure. You know, shows out of LA, shows out of Northern California, shows out of Washington, Arizona, Australia. So London. So we got quite a big circle.
Yeah, if people want to check that out, do you guys have a certain website for the whole network?
No, we don't actually. We haven't done the website thing yet because I know it probably makes sense to do a website. Just to me, websites are kind of antiquated.
Right.
Setup, for the expense of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess at some point I probably should do that, but no, what we do is we all just hook up on Instagram.
Okay. And
Instagram is pretty much the hub for podcasters.
Yeah.
So that's where, if you want to find a podcast, or follow a podcaster, that's where you go, is Instagram. We got a pretty good circle going, in New England. And that was what was funny. That's how I found your episode on Tinfoil Hat, because when you were on there, Sam had you had told Sam that you were up in New England, and he said, "Oh, you're up in New England. Do you know Ron from New England? He's a researcher and does shows and stuff." And you're like, "No, I never heard of him." And he goes, "Wow, I got to get you hooked up."
Yeah.
Well, that's when I took the initiative to try to hunt you down. And I'm like, okay, if this guy's in New England, we got to get him kind of in the circle of New England stuff, because I'd like to do a meetup.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I just need wheels at the moment. Yeah.
Well, I thought it would be cool because I have a pretty good location here. We can get all the podcasters from New England to come and visit on a certain day.
That would be cool.
And we have a lot of listeners in New England.
Yeah.
And we can say, okay, well, we're all going to be here. We're going to hang out. We'll do Q&A. We'll do whatever you want. Come on up.
Right.
We'll throw some burgers on the grill.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Well, going back, now that we introduced the podcasting and everything, what got you originally, like, what was it that got you into like the paranormal or cryptids, the more interesting things in our reality, in my opinion?
Okay. So that goes all the way back to childhood.
Okay.
Oh yeah. So I'm almost sick. I'm going to be 60 years old this year. So I'm not a young guy. And when I was a kid, there was a TV show on. No, this is before cable and internet and all that. Right.
I mean,
we had rotary phones, right?
Right.
So I was into this show called In Search Of, that was hosted by Leonard Nimoy.
That's right.
And I just was addicted to that show, and it only came on like once a week. So it was a big deal to make sure you were home.
Yeah.
Right. And got control of the television. Like, we didn't even have remotes back then.
Just like three channels and maybe a UHF.
Yeah. I think we had four channels and three UHF channels.
Yeah.
Because we had channel four, which was WBZ out of Boston.
We still have that here. Yeah.
And then we had LVI, and then you're probably familiar. And then SBK, of course, channel 38.
Movie Loft with Charles.
The Movie Loft. And what else were they famous for on the weekend? Three Stooges.
Yeah.
So
and WLVI was channel 56, and they would have like creature feature and things.
Late at night, you could always get some really cool movies, right?
Oh yeah.
But it was definitely in search of, and then that's what introduced me to Bigfoot and aliens and all that other stuff. And yeah. I was just sucked right in.
Oh yeah.
And then when I was, you know, maybe a year or two later, of course, that's when Star Wars came out. And then right after that is when Close Encounters came out.
Yeah.
So that kind of solidified the whole thing, right? And I remember even watching documentaries about Bigfoot, like back then, on SBK, you know, they yeah. like on the weekends, they'd have these little, probably like half hour, 45 minute long shows about Bigfoot. Yeah. I'm like, okay, I already took the hook, line, and sinker.
And then we go over the Patterson-Gimli footage, right?
Like, sure. Yeah, that was the first time I saw that when I was a little kid, which is kind of funny when you look back. I mean, that's, you know, 40-plus years ago, 45 years ago.
Yeah, and Lauren Coleman, famous cryptozoologist, his museum in Portland, Maine. Supposedly, yeah. I think I saw in the glass case, it has the actual film camera that they used to capture all that.
Yeah, you know, I've never had a chance, and now I go to Portland a couple times a year. And we always go with a group of friends, and it's just a party weekend.
Yeah.
And I keep telling everybody, we got to go to the Bigfoot Museum. Of course, everybody in my friend circles thinks I'm cuckoo anyways.
Right.
They're like, nah. And my wife is like, Bigfoot doesn't exist. I go, oh, my God. I hope we wake up one night and see Bigfoot swimming in our pool. Yeah. Just so you will believe me and then maybe take a different stance on it. Right.
Yeah, a little open-minded, you know.
Yeah, I mean, because I literally have no doubt. And as a matter of fact, there's Bigfoot encounters in the town that the haunted garage is located in.
Now, tell everyone about the haunted garage as a little before we get to, because now I'm like, you really got me like, all right. Let's just explain what the haunted garage is, and then we'll get to Sasquatch.
Okay. All right. Well, let me give you a little background.
Yeah.
So the haunted garage, if you listen to the Wicked Planet, Buckley always says, coming to you from the haunted garage, right? And there's a reason for that. Like, this place is haunted. This whole property is haunted. This property goes back to the late 1700s, early 1800s.
Wow.
I have seen two ghosts on this property, seen them both. They're separate. One's an older man and one's a little boy. He's like 9 or 10 years old. And I've seen them both a few times. Now, I'm not the only one in the family that's had ghost encounters. Almost everybody in my family that lives up in what we call the big house, the big farmhouse,
right,
has seen the ghost, okay? So where the haunted garage is now, like, we moved this building here from another location and erected it here, and this was the first part of the garage. Wow. And it's big. The building's big. And we don't know, like where this building is on the footprint was all hen houses, because this property was one of the largest poultry farms in New England at one time. Now New Hampshire is known for being a big poultry state.
Yeah.
Like, not so much now, but used to be, right? And so we know that there was hen houses that were torn down or whatever, and we don't know what happened in them hen houses, right? I mean, we didn't even have cops in this town until probably the late 50s or early 1960s. So we think there's a lot of sketchy stuff that used to go on in this town. So who knows? Maybe somebody died. Somebody could have got murdered.
Something. I was going to ask if you were kind of maybe hinting at maybe there was like a, some kind of a torture murder thing going on. Like,
you never know. Wow. We just don't know. It was a prominent family that did own this property. Wow. And as a matter of fact, the family that owned this property, all the farms on this end of town were owned by the same family, right? And the other thing too is we have our own cemetery here. So
wow, they could just bury anybody.
You know what's weird about it? It's not a huge cemetery by any stretch, but it's not real small either. Right. There's only 3 or 4 headstones in that cemetery. Only one of them is like a real headstone that's carved. All the other ones are just rocks, ledge rock laid on their side.
Like a pauper's grave kind of thing. Like
something like that. Yeah. But they're all up at one end of the cemetery. We don't know what's at the other end of the cemetery, with the exception of a couple of my dogs that I buried in the cemetery. But anyway, so we have had all kinds of weird activity in this shop. We even had some activity late one night when we finished up recording, even when our co-host Kristen and Buckley were here, they could hear people walking around down there, and they said, oh, somebody's down in the garage. I said, no, because I didn't hear the door open. And there's no lights out there. So what you're hearing is the ghost walking around. And this is what we hear. We hear paper shuffling. We hear tools jingling. We hear things being moved on benches. And it's no joke, Chris. It's a real deal. Now, when Buckley's brother, Kellen, who runs Lone Star Paranormal Research, he's a ghost hunter, when he comes up on vacation to see his mom, he always brings his gear and we do an investigation here. It was a couple of times before. And all this footage is actually on YouTube. We went up to the cemetery. We did the big barn where a gentleman hung himself in our barn.
Right.
And we think that that is one of the ghosts, right? And then he did an investigation in the AKA haunted garage. Well, we watched a video. You want to talk about orbs flying around? So, and up in the barn, he heard faint dogs barking up in the cemetery.
Yeah.
And this was on a very still, like, full moon night. So it was, and there's no other houses around us either. Like, they're a long ways off. So anyways, that's why we call it the haunted garage, because there's shit going on here that we don't know about. I've actually had people that have worked for me or friends that have asked to borrow the garage. They will not come to this garage and work late at night by themselves. They just won't do it.
I don't blame them.
I mean, it doesn't bother me. I've been in this garage every day since I was a kid.
Right,
you know, it's something that we become accustomed to. And I mean, it's not like the ghost is angry ghost or anything. It's not
like a poltergeist,
that.
Right? Where they're like,
No, it's not. It's not. They're not what we call mean ghosts, like, at all. So it doesn't really bother me.
You hear the stories where they're like, some of these apparitions or poltergeists will start biting somebody, like usually a child. Like, you remember hearing those accounts? Like, nothing like that.
Absolutely nothing like that. Not even in the house. In the house, it's been very, very mild. Very mild.
Now, did you ever have any, like, TV shows back in, like, the 80s and 90s, like, offered to, like, the show Sightings that I used to watch on Fox all the time? Like, they would do investigations where they would go to, like, haunted residences or alien abduction, you know, victims or something. Did your family not want that kind of attention, or?
No. And just a footnote, like when my parents bought this place, it was disclosed from the real estate agent.
Right.
That there was supposedly it could have been haunted. Cause I guess they have to disclose that.
They do. I heard. Yeah.
Yeah. So, my mother won't have anything to do with any investigations.
Okay. All right.
Yes. Great. So that's what's that about. She goes, listen, we all know something's going on here. We don't need to publicize that.
That's right. You know what I mean? Most people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My mother's very old school. So
I understand that. Now moving on to the Sasquatch.
Yeah. If you go on, now I have my own feelings about BFRO, and I know a lot of people do also, but that being said,
yeah,
there are encounters from this town that are on the BFRO site that go back quite a few years.
Did you see the Sasquatch?
I haven't seen the Sasquatch, but God strike me dead, I've heard him. And I've heard multiple Sasquatches, and even as recent as not this last Wednesday before, because we record Wicked Planet on a Wednesday. Then I do the editing and stuff. It goes out a couple of days later.
Yeah.
It was a warm night. It was a full moon night. And maybe it was a couple of weeks ago. Anyways. And it had just rained, right? So it was really quiet. It was quiet out in the woods, and I'd gotten home kind of late, And of course, after the show, you know, I don't go home and go right to bed, right? So I'm hanging out with my dogs.
Right.
And my dogs like to go out like late at night, so they're not waking me up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go outside, right? So we did all that. And my female Willow, she was a little sketched out and she did her business, but wanted to go right back in the house. So I said, okay, cool. So we did that. So now I'm thinking, okay, what's going on? Because she's very perceptive. And so I want to say probably a half hour later, I go out to have like my final smoke of the night.
Yeah.
And I mean, Chris, it is dead quiet outside. No peepers, no nothing. And and for the listeners, a peeper are the little frogs that make it sound like a mass amounts of crickets.
Yeah, right.
Everybody thinks it's crickets. It's not. It's frogs.
Frogs, yeah.
So I'm outside and there's none of that going on. So I'm on my deck. And of course, when I'm outside, my yard is lit up from all of our motion cameras.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I hear an owl hooting. Now, we do have owls that come in close to the house, right? So, and we have multiple owls, so they'll hoot, and then you'll hear one further up the street or across the road, they'll hoot back, right?
Right.
So at first, you know, that does, when you're not expecting it, it kind of does startle you a little bit because they're loud.
Right.
Like this owl was close enough to be extremely loud. And I'm like, okay, fine, just an owl. About less than 2 minutes later, I hear something further out in the woods, like calling out to the owl. And this is what's bizarre. Now, I have had an audio encounter of what I would describe as a juvenile Sasquatch up in northern New Hampshire while four-wheeling. And we can talk about that a little bit after. So I've listened to a bunch of tapes of sounds that Sasquatch or alleged Sasquatch make when these people are recording them, right? Now, I'm not talking about the Sierra sounds. Everybody knows about those, right?
Yeah.
But the one kind of common thread is they say, like, the younger juveniles will kind of hoot like a monkey. And I will try to do the best impression of what I heard.
Okay, yeah.
But this is what I heard. It was, okay, dude, that is not an owl.
No, not at all.
And it kept doing it. Now, I could tell it was close to the house, but it wasn't as close as the other owl.
Right.
It was further out in the woods. And then it stopped.
Wow.
And then the owl started hooting some more. And then about 30 seconds later, it starts in again. And this went about 3 or 4 rounds of them doing that. And then I'm trying to rationalize it, and, you know, and be logical.
Right.
I'm like, maybe that's just another owl. It's calling out to this one, but boy, oh boy, it doesn't sound like an owl. Now, I know owls can make some weird sounds, but I swear to God, this sounds like a young Sasquatch. Now, we're me and Anonymous Sean, and if anybody listens to The Wicked Planet, they'll know who Anonymous Sean is. He's a pretty steady contributor to the panel during the winter. In the summer, he's not here much because his business is seasonal.
Right.
Him and I, now he has said that he has seen the Sasquatch on his road. Now, he hasn't told anybody about that other than me, right? Back then. I mean, he doesn't care now.
Right.
But he was talking with one of his neighbors across the street one day, just talking, you know, and his neighbor or something said, have you heard anything weird like out in the woods at night or whatever? And Sean's like, not really wanting to tell the guy anything, but he's kind of wanting to get the information from him, right?
Right.
And he goes, yeah, once in a while, why? What did you hear? And then the guy proceeds to explain to him what he heard and what his cousin, who was staying with him for like a month, saw. His cousin was camping out in a finished off room in his basement.
Yeah.
And he swears to God that he had looked out the window. You know the cellar windows, Chris, that are up high? They're kind of narrow.
And you can't really, like, see out of them because they're so high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said he was looking out that, and he swears to God he saw a big monkey looking in the window at him.
Really?
Freaked him out. So then he goes, like, in a different window to try to see around and see if he could see. And he said he saw something walking off that was absolutely huge.
Wow.
And we're talking, Anonymous Sean only lives about a mile and a half from me as the crow flies.
Right.
So this incidentally happens to be the same location where a pastor had a dogman encounter on this same road. And we have no reason to not believe this guy.
Right.
But he said it was late at night. He was driving down the road and he thought he saw a dog getting ready to run out into the road. So he got on the brakes. Now it's a dirt road.
Yeah.
So he stopped the car. This thing came out. Oh, hold on, I lost you. This thing came out of the woods, ran in front of his car, looked at him, jumped on the hood of his car, and looked at him through the windshield. Now, this is what the pastor says. I have no way of verifying this.
But it's a pastor.
But I also have no reason to disbelieve him.
Right.
And he said it scared the bejesus out of him. He said, and it jumped off his car and continued in the direction it was headed. Now, he told Anonymous Sean that story. And I'm like, that is bizarre, because when I was in my probably late teens, early 20s, I had a dream where I was out at the end of our barn. And I was looking up into the field right in the area where the cemetery is. And I could see, now this is before I ever heard anybody call him Dogman. To me, a Dogman's a werewolf.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially. I mean, it could be different, but that's my take on it.
Werewolf, yeah.
And in my dream, there was a werewolf up there. He saw me, and he started running towards the barn. And in my dream, I went to go grab a gun in the barn, and I had the gun, and I was trying to load it, but the bullets that I had, of course, didn't fit the gun. And that werewolf got all the way up to me, and then the dream ended. And I'll tell you what, that freaked me out. Now, how many times have we heard where there is a Sasquatch sighting? Sometimes that coincides with a Dogman sighting. And there is a theory that they're either working together in some fashion. We don't know.
Also with UFOs, too.
That, too. But I have an interesting thing to add to this. I love the show Sasquatch Chronicles, right?
Yeah.
I remember a couple of years ago listening to an episode. And this gentleman was on talking about his werewolf or dogman encounter, right? He didn't say the name of the town, but he said the name of the lake. So I knew exactly where he was.
Right.
This town is only two towns over from me. And he talked about he was walking his girlfriend home. Now, this is like a community there where it started out with just people building lots of camps. And then as time goes by, these camps were converted into homes. He was walking his girlfriend home and there was something up in a tree. And he looked up and there was something in the tree watching him crouch down, jumped out of the tree, landed on all fours in front of them. But when he ran off, he ran on his back legs. To me, that's not a dog.
No.
You know what I mean?
Not at all, no.
And not to mention how New Hampshire is actually a hotbed of not only UFO activity, but also Sasquatch activity.
Yeah. I didn't know so much about the Sasquatch activity, but I knew about the history with Betty and Barney Hill with the UFO activity.
One of the most prominent first alien abduction stories there ever was.
Yeah.
Was Barney and Betty Hill. And it took place in the mountains in New Hampshire. As a matter of fact, I know right where it took place.
Right near Laconia, right? White Mountain?
No. Further up.
Right.
There's a place now, it was up near Franconia Notch is where it was. And if you go through the notch, there's a big resort up there called the Indian Head Resort.
I've been outside of there. Yeah.
It happened right out, basically started happening within a half a mile or a mile of the Indian Head Resort. So I know that stretch of road, but what's interesting about it is that we have all three of these phenomenons happening. And you could say four phenomenons if you want to bring the orbs into it.
Yes, yes.
Like the lights in the woods. Now, I have experienced the lights in the woods while in Maine, but way up in Maine, like on the Canadian border. And I actually have somebody that could back that story up. We were four-wheeling on this trail, headed back to our camp. We're going down this trail, which is kind of wide enough for maybe one side by side. If somebody else was coming down, you'd have to pull over and let them by.
Right.
Now, I had two instances with lights in this area. The one I'm telling you about right now is actually the second story. We'll get to the first story after. So coming back from the store or the bar, we're taking this trail that goes back to the cabin that we have rented. And we're coming up the trail and I see a light coming. Now there's nowhere to turn off on this trail other than the turn off that we take to go to the cabin. And I can remember saying, well, let's try to get to the cutoff before they get here, right? Yeah. And we're going, and that light's coming. All of a sudden, the light disappears. And I'm like, did they lose their headlight? So we pulled over to illuminate the trail for them in case they lost the headlight, because that happens.
Right.
Nobody was there. It was a phantom light, and it wasn't light from the road. There was no other trails off the end that they could take. It just not happening.
Right.
Okay. So that was the second light encounter I had actually had in that week, because when we go up, we go for a week and we go, we side by side and we four wheel up there like all week, every day. Couple of days prior to that, we had taken a really long trip. Like we did like 150 miles that day, which doesn't sound like a lot, but through the woods, that's a long day, right?
Yeah.
We're coming back and it's nighttime. Now, you're not supposed to be on the trails at night. In New Hampshire, that's a big no-no. In Maine, not so much, because where we were, there was no police.
Okay.
Because it was on, this is actually the last town you hit before you hit the Canadian border.
Okay, yeah.
So the only police that's there is there's a state trooper that goes up every 2 weeks and he spends the day there. And the other police is the Border Patrol. The Border Patrol will come down, drive through town, let everybody know they're there. Dude, they go to the store, they get gas, they don't even get out of their car.
Right.
But I shouldn't say car, because they drive big four-wheel drive SUVs.
Yeah.
So anyways, we're coming back from, I want to say it was a place called the Forks that we rode to. And we're coming back and it's dark, right? It's dark. So I'm like, it's fine for us because we have LED headlights on our machines and you can literally see forever, right? And I'm always the trail captain, so I'm always the lead machine. And we're going up and I tell you right now, there's lights coming in the other direction. I'm like, okay, so I tap my brakes, so my brake lights flash a few times. That's a little signal for everybody behind us to start slowing down, pay attention to something up ahead, right? So I pull up, and we pull over a little bit to let them by, and the same thing. It disappeared.
Just a glowing orb.
But, there was a road off to the side, like right up from us, like maybe 50 feet up from us.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, again, trying to be logical. Okay, did they pull up that trail? Maybe they got a camp up there. But I pulled up there and I looked up that trail and it was a straight trail. You could see for a long, long ways. I saw no taillights and there's no way they would have made it that far. And the amount of time it took me to get from where I saw them and the lights went out to get to the end of that road, they had to have been going 100 miles an hour to outrun me. I still would have been able to see their lights in the woods.
Yeah.
So that was the first time. Then the story I told you before, that was the second time. Right then and there, and my buddy Mike, who was with me, is like, dude, what is going on?
Right.
I'm like, it's nothing to freak out about. It's the whole, lights in the woods, mysterious lights in the woods thing. It's all it is. Don't freak yourself out.
Easier said than done.
Yeah. Well, I don't get freaked out about it only because I'm kind of in tune to all these things, right?
Well, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So of course, so I've always had this interest in all of this stuff. Now, yes, I can talk all day about geopolitics.
Yeah.
I can talk all day about regular conspiracies. But the whole cryptid alien thing, that's really like my baby.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. We actually have the New Hampshire Sasquatch researcher comes into the studio like once a year. He's been in twice.
What's his name?
Oh, boy, you had to ask me that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Just the researcher for now.
Yeah. Well, I actually don't know if he'd even want me to say his name. But if you go on Instagram and just search out New Hampshire Sasquatch Research,
you'll come up.
You will find him. Yeah. Okay. So a good dude, real good dude. He's a little on the dry side. The first time he came on the show, he froze up. We had to rope him out.
Really?
Get him going. Yeah, well, he was nervous. He'd never been on a podcast before.
Yeah, good point.
But anyways, we got him to open up, and we went over a bunch of his stories. If you go on his Instagram, he puts in encounters and stuff. Now, he's not been very active lately. But how I found him was based on my audio encounter that I had while, again, four-wheeling up in northern New Hampshire.
Of a baby Sasquatch, right?
Not a baby, but I would say not a baby, but not really a full-fledged juvenile either. So I was saying, so say a human kid that was 5 or 6 years old.
Okay.
However that works.
Right.
So check this out. At this time, I want to say that we had about 10 or 12 machines this day, right? And of course, when we're riding, it's in the summer, the trails are dry, it's dusty. So what helps the dust go down? You stop and have a toddy. You have a drink.
Right. Yes.
These guys want to stop and have a beer. I drink the little margaritas out of the can. So we stopped in this pull-off that was clearly an old gravel pit that had grown back in.
Yeah.
And we're up on the trail, which was up high, and then there was a road that kind of went down into this pit, right? Now, keep in mind, we're miles from anything, right? I want to say about a 5-minute ride up is where we had to cross a main highway. Yeah. But we're motoring, so you're talking 3-4 miles, like, from where we were, which through the woods is a long ways, right? Right. So anyway, so we stop in this little pull off because we have to pick a spot that all of us can get off the trail. So we do that. We stop. We all have a drink. We're just kind of shooting the breeze a little bit. And one of the couples is a really young couple. She was actually the daughter to a very good friend of ours and her husband that okay. ride with us all the time, right? So I said, well, I got to take a leak. I'm going to walk down into the pit here and, you know, find a tree. And the daughter's like, oh, I need to go too. So can I go down with you? And maybe you can just, because she was chicken to be in the woods. This girl's a city girl.
Right.
So she's out in the woods and she's already freaked out. I'm like, yeah, no problem. I'll go here. You go over there. So I'm there. I'm doing my thing. All of a sudden I hear kids giggling in the woods. Giggling, laughing, tee-heeing, talking, can't really make out what they're saying, right?
Yeah.
Let's just call it gibberish. And first thing I thought of was, oh, does somebody have a camp out here? And I'm thinking to myself, very unlikely, because all this land out there is owned by the paper companies.
Yeah.
So the paper company controls all that. Now, they do let people put camps out there. You sign like a 100-year lease. You don't own the land, but you can put a dwelling on it. Okay. So I'm thinking maybe that's what it was. But then I'm thinking, there's no way. There's no way. There's no roads off here. There's no trails. There's nothing. Like, how would they get to it, right? Again, thinking to myself. So then I'm listening, and it's continuing and continuing. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to make out, see if they're talking, right? So I'm listening really hard. And whatever they're saying, I can't make out what they're saying, right? Plain and simple. I'm like, okay, so already I have in my mind, possibility, juvenile Sasquatch is out there just raising hell, playing. Because they do that. Now, there's been encounters where people have explained exactly what I'm talking about, right? So I'm like, okay, I'm thinking to myself, okay, if there's juveniles around or younger than juveniles, there's going to be adults around, or at least an adult mother.
Yeah.
Because any research that we do with Sasquatch, they travel in family pods and the mom is not that far away, just like bears.
Yeah.
Right. Like if you get near a bear cub, mama bear's around, dude, you are in trouble.
You're gone.
Yeah. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, so I'm just going to slowly walk back up to the machines. As I'm walking up, she comes out of her little spot and she's looking at me like she saw a ghost, right? And I'm like, what's up? She looks, because I didn't want to alarm her because she's already like sketched out, right?
Right.
Did you hear that? And I'm like, hear what? Because I want to see what she says. There's little kids out in the woods. I can hear them out there laughing and playing and stuff. Why would there be little kids out here? I'm like, well, so you heard the same thing I heard. I heard it also. She goes, you heard it? What do you think it is? I said, you're not going to want to know what I think it is.
Yeah.
I said, but this is what we're going to do. Now, we had to walk a couple of hundred feet to get back to the machines, right?
Right.
I said, just walk normal pace. Let's not look back. Let's walk up to the machines and just, I'll explain it to you later. But what we're going to do right now, we're going to saddle up. We're going to get out of here.
Yeah.
So we get up to the machines and everybody's out there. They're being loud and they're drinking and having cigarettes and all this other stuff. And I'm like, all right, everybody, let's mount up. Let's move out. Let's go cross the highway. When we get on the other side of the highway, we'll pull over again, have another drink. Oh, why? I want to finish my drink. I said, trust me, we need to go now. And the girl is like, listen to him. We need to go now. And her boyfriend, who's her actual husband now, is like, okay, if she says we need to go, we probably ought to go. So everybody, they didn't ask any more questions. We all get in our machines, get the cooler strap down, hold 9 yards, and we go like two to four miles up where the road crosses down into a main road that goes up to northern New Hampshire, right? Now, this is a road you could easily do 70, 75 miles an hour on. Again, there's no cops up north here. Once in a while, there might be a sheriff. Most of the time, it's fish and game cops, or what we call fish cops. We cross the road. We go about another mile, and there's this big trail intersection. So we pulled over there, and we had another drink. And then I told everybody what we saw. Oh, not what we saw, but what we heard. And my wife's like, oh, Christ, come on. Seriously? I said, I'm serious.
Yeah.
So anyways, we get through that whole frickamarole. And then we continue on to where we were going because we had a place we were going to go, have some dinner, and then ride back, right? So that was the end of that. Probably 6 months later, I'm on Instagram at home, and I'm just scrolling. I'm bored. And I come across this post that says New Hampshire Sasquatch Research. And he's shows a map of this encounter, and he explains the encounter. So I push on it, I blow the map up, and dude, this was within a mile and a half through the woods from where our audio encounter happened.
Right.
And I'm like, because I have my trail maps. I can go on my phone, yeah, on my Polaris app, Ride Command it's called, and I can pull it up and it plots your whole route. And I'm looking, I kind of, you know, put it up against his map and I'm looking, and dude, it's the same area. Where this fishing game cop was driving down the road and he saw a big person standing on the tree line. Now this road goes, and then you got probably 50 feet right away on both sides of the road where it's all mowed and stuff.
Yeah.
And then it's tall pines. It's all trees. Fishing game cop said, what is this guy doing? He slows down and look, and he discovered that is not a human.
Right.
And he looked and he kept going. And when he got back to his ranger station, he was talking to one of the other guys. They're like, okay, you didn't see nothing. He goes, no, I saw it. He goes, no, listen, you didn't see anything.
Yeah.
And don't ever talk about it. So a few years later, this guy like retires somehow or other. New Hampshire Sasquatch guy gets in contact with him and he tells him the whole story. But he said, you can't use my name, because I want to say he was threatened with possibly losing his pension.
Really?
Because they do not want people to think or know that they're Sasquatch in northern New Hampshire. And let me tell you why. This is all land owned by the paper company. What does the paper company grow trees for? To turn it into wood pulp.
Pulp, yeah.
So they have to deal with forestry. Even though they own the land, they still have to get permits to cut any amount of trees off that land.
Right.
If a logging operation, and now most of these roads that we're traveling, that I'm talking about, oh, these are all logging roads. Where you, I mean, they're nice roads where you would actually see a, you know, an 18-wheeler full of logs. You know, they have the right of way, obviously. There's big signs. Trucks have the right of way. If you see a truck coming, you pull over, you stop. Just like if it was an emergency vehicle, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. So, wow. So anyways, I just lost my train of thought.
Where no, was but I? You, well, you, they're threatened because.
Oh, okay. Okay. So this guy is telling me the story and I'm like, do you think you could get him to come on the show? He goes, I said, we can keep him totally anonymous. So he reached out to him. Well, I guess that guy flipped out on him. And he said, I'm not risking going on any shows. I'm not giving anybody my name. I'm not talking. I don't want anybody to know my voice. I mean, he was pretty adamant, which just led me to believe that his story was legit.
Right.
Right. So it's crazy. Wow. But getting, okay, so I remember where I was. If you have a logging operation going on and it is discovered that there's any type of animal habitat, or if there's Sasquatch sighting or footprints or anything like that.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if the state of New Hampshire would do this, but I know that they do this out west. They will go in and shut that logging operation down. Because there are actual states, even though Bigfoot allegedly does not exist, there are some states that have laws on the books protecting Sasquatch. And any logging operation that if somebody says there's a Sasquatch here, they cover that up. They get rid of the tracks. They get rid of anything that shows that there was ever a Sasquatch there. And they continue their clear cutting. And they're like, why would we do that? Because they will come in and shut this whole operation down. And America runs on money, doesn't run on Dunkin's, like we're told in New England.
Exactly. Yeah.
They do not want these logging operations to be shut down due to something that doesn't exist.
Makes sense. Yeah.
So they throw it under the rug and they forget about it. And that's basically the gist of it.
Have you talked to anybody that was in a logging company that actually came across
something? I have not in New England, no.
Oh, okay.
But that is on my to-do list. Just get them off the record.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And say, listen, I know this is going to be a little far out, but have you ever seen XYZ?
Or something weird out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's crazy. But there's a lot of activity in New Hampshire, like for sure.
I love that. The thing I wanted to ask you the most, have you had your own personal UFO encounter or experience?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've actually told this story before.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Years ago when I was still living at home and I had a girlfriend that would come and stay with me pretty frequently. We're out there sitting out on my mom's got a big farmer's porch on the front of her farm. And we have a huge lawn and it looks over to a big patch of woods and it's all open sky. So we're sitting out there one night and we're looking up in the sky and there's all these like weird orbs and weird lights. Like not like a UFO sighting in the sense that most people would think, oh yeah, I just saw something fly over and it's got weird lights. No, like nothing like that.
Nothing like that. A disc or a triangle or anything. Okay.
Nothing like that. Now you're talking, boy, when I was with her was the mid 1980s. And we saw these weird lights up in the sky. And I'm like, we got to go check that out. So we hop in my car and we go up the street, take the next road on the right that goes all the way up on the top of that hill, and which is weird enough because this is where I live today, and this is where Anonymous Sean lives. Right. This area we're talking about.
Yeah.
So they got this big, it's all hills, but when you get up on the top, it's flat. We call it the flats. And it's the geographical center of town. They actually call it the center, but there's nothing there but an old church and a town hall, right?
Wow.
So in a huge cemetery. So we're driving towards the cemetery and we look up and these lights are following my car. It was like three or four of them. They're following my car. Now my girlfriend's getting really, really upset. Like, oh no, let's get out of here. Let's get the F out of here.
Yeah.
Let's get out of here. Let's go back to the house or whatever. So we drove up, we turned around in the church parking lot and we came back. Well, you know what? They followed us back.
Back to the church?
We went to the church and turned around.
Oh, okay.
And started coming back in the same direction. They were still there, kind of just mirroring us up in the sky.
And they turned around too.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, so we're just going to go back to my mom. So we come back down to the house. And by the time we got here and looked up to see where they were gone. There was nothing. I sat out there for like another hour to see if they would come back. I don't know what it was. It wasn't any type of lightning or anything like that.
Did you turn on the nightly news and hear if there were other sightings? Because I had the same situation where I got to see on Fox 25.
Yeah, my triangle. You know what? Well, I think the triangles are us.
Personally. I do too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the triangles are us. I think that's United States secret technology.
It's just classified technology. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. They wouldn't really talk about it on the news here. I mean, our news is pretty lame.
Oh, okay.
But if you go, there's a UFO sighting reporting page, and I forget the name of it.
Oh, is it UFON?
You mean MUFON?
MUFON, that's it.
Yeah, no, it might be part of MUFON.
Okay.
But this database goes all the way back to the 50s and 60s.
Okay, yeah.
And if you go on there and you click on New Hampshire, or you go on
this website. I know what you're talking about.
And you pick out just the areas around you, and you could go ahead. They post the whole encounter. They put in any paperwork, any police reports, anything in that.
Yeah.
And there's always sightings like from this area there.
They incorporate a lot of like Blue Book from like the 60s and on that website too.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's
good. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. It's something, you know what, Chris, is something that I want to get more into and just like the paranormal stuff. And that's why I want to get together with you.
Yeah.
Now I already talked to one of our other fellow New England podcasters who's not too far from you. And we're talking, we want to get together and just go visit the Bridgewater Triangle.
That's where I am right now.
You know, because that all goes back to, was it Prince Philip's War, which Prince Philip was the name that they gave an Indian.
It was King Philip. Yeah, King Philip's King War. Philip. One of the bloodiest wars.
Yeah, and then you had Metacomet, the Indian Metacomet.
Well, that was King Philip.
Yep. King Philip, yeah. So, and how he was heinously killed there, and allegedly he cursed that area.
That's the idea, yeah.
Yeah, so Anonymous Sean and I have this belief that this is a cursed town that we live in and that there was some curse put on this town because weird stuff goes on in this town.
So it's the same kind of idea.
Same kind of idea. Now, I do know in my town's historical records, because I was the president of the Historical Society for about 10 years.
Wow.
That there was an Indian chief. His name was Sabattis, and he lived up on the highest point in this town that's actually called Sabattis Heights is what it's called today. There's a great big stone monument up there from Fieldstone built, and he was a lot of trouble for the settlers here.
Wow.
And one of his buddies was also a chief by the name of Plazawa, which lived down in these towns about 15 miles, 10 or 15 miles from here. There's actually a golf course that used to be there that was called Plazawa, was the name of the golf course. Well, it was named after this Indian chief.
Right.
Well, he was a bad character too. Now, these two particular gentlemen actually were scouts for Benedict Arnold when he marched on Quebec in the French and Indian War, when they fought for the English and they were going to Quebec to take over one of the forts, one of the French forts in Canada, which I think today they call it the Citadel. So they were scouts for Benedict Arnold, like before, this is pre-American Revolution.
Okay? Right.
Just to give you a little backstory on these guys, right? So these guys, like, have you ever seen the story Last of the Mohicans?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When these guys were scouts for the soldiers. Okay, so basically same idea, right? But the Sabattis guy had caused so much trouble for the settlers. They're like, a bunch of them got together, said, this is what we're going to do. Because Sabattis liked to drink.
Yeah.
And you once you get them on the fire water, well, they're going to go freaking berserk, right?
Fire water. I haven't heard that in a while.
So, yeah. So what they did was they had him come down for dinner. They got him drunk. And when he was drunk enough to be incapacitated, they murdered him.
Of course. Yeah.
And then they moved his corpse a bunch of towns over and they hid it in a secret location that's been narrowed down to this place called Indian Bridge because they didn't want him to be a martyr. They didn't want people to find out he was murdered and then, you know, cause more trouble.
Right.
And I don't know if maybe he had this ongoing curse or maybe his friend Plazawa had put a curse on this area or something like that. We don't know. And we don't even know if it goes back further than that. Because here's something I discovered when I was running the Historical Society.
Yeah.
Up in the center, right, which is where I had my, I won't say UFO encounter, I'll just say strange aerial phenomenon.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay, because I didn't see any spaceships.
It wasn't a craft. It was like lights. Yeah.
It was bizarre.
Okay.
In the research that I did at the Historical Society, I had discovered that on this road, because that's a four corners right at that church, one road goes to the right and it's tar, but you can go straight and that's now a class six road, or you can go left down to where Anonymous Sean lives. That's a dirt road. Okay. So, but it's still a four corners, right? At that four corners, at one time, there was a Masonic hall there.
Okay. Wow.
And there's not a lot of information about it, but it clearly says a Masonic hall in the old documents that I discovered.
And you were in the Historical Society, so
I ran it. I was the president.
That's what I'm saying. So yeah. you would be the people, or yeah, you would be the person, yeah, to know this.
And we know that possibly a lot of funky things happens with the Masonic halls, right? And the Masons, of course, you know, I'm not 100% on board with that, but I'm just saying, coincidental that there happened to be a Masonic hall there.
Right.
Yeah, it's all very interesting, the things that you can discover in your own backyard.
And I didn't even know about the Bridgewater Triangle until I was in my late teens, and it was in my backyard.
And you were living there,
yeah. Well, yeah, and it was, when I found out that it was like a Bermuda Triangle on land and in southeastern Massachusetts, My mind was like, whoa, and then I immediately started thinking about, oh, I want to make this a movie, because I was always I want to make a movie, like a horror movie type thing.
Yeah, you know what? You know what? There's so many bizarre stories that are tied in with the Bridgewater Triangle.
I know.
And I have to say, there's probably a fair amount of stories that never got told.
Oh, yeah.
Because people are like, okay, I don't want anybody to think I'm nuts.
There's a lot of those, too, yeah.
But not only that, but the area that encompasses the Bridgewater Triangle is all like industrial area now.
I know.
Right? You know? You got the Hockomock Swamp, which is the epicenter of the Bridgewater Triangle, is where this weird stuff goes on.
Which has those lights that you were mentioning out in the woods. They call them spook lights.
Crazy. And then, of course, we have our own little puck wedgies.
The puck wedgies, that's right. Yeah.
Which nobody has ever heard of. Like, I don't know. That's maybe like a uniquely New England thing, the puck wedgie.
Yeah, the puck wedgies in Native American folklore, where they would be tricksters and try to get your kids and everything, you know?
Yeah, I can just only describe them as like semi-demonic garden gnomes.
Gnomes, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. 3 foot tall or whatever.
Yeah, small, small, like little leprechauns kind of.
I was saying leprechauns before, and then I was like, maybe gnomes or elves or something. But yeah,
I say more so gnomes.
Yeah, yeah. Probably the gnome thing.
Yeah, or super interesting, the history in New England. We could talk for hours about it, and I have a feeling
we're going to do that.
Yeah, we're probably going to do that. Yeah,
I hope to very much so.
Yeah.
So, like I said before, I apologize for starting late, just for the reasons I was telling you before. But for anyone out there, for everyone out there, how can they find your work? And if you want to be contacted, because not all my guests want to be contacted.
Yep.
If you would like to, how can people contact you as well?
Okay, so just so everybody knows, I have zero problem with that.
Cool.
Okay, so we do this at the end of our show, every episode, right?
Yep.
Now, I'm really active on Instagram. So you go on Instagram and look for Ron from New England. All one word. I got a separate page for that.
Yeah.
And then I have a page for the Wicked Planet podcast. Go follow both of those, if you would, please. You can find me on Twitter at Ron from NE. And if you follow Chris Graves, you'll find me because I'm on his list.
That's right.
So you can find me there. Our show does have a pretty bumping Telegram, and that's the Wicked Planet podcast chat.
Yep.
It's open to anybody and everybody that wants to join it. I don't vet you, but if you do anything dumb, I delete you.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. So if you want to email the Wicked Planet, please do. It's the Wicked Planet podcast at gmail.com. Send me stuff. Feel free to DM me on Instagram. Now, I get a lot of emails. I get a lot of DMs. So if you don't hear back from me like within 24 hours or something, like, dude, don't take it personal.
And you, well, you're busy with your own, you have your own thing going on too.
Buddy, I've got, you know how they say you have a full-time job? I have a full-time and a half job. Right. So when I'm not working here, my wife has me super busy. So like
I had three jobs.
I had to sneak into the studio to do this show with you.
Well,
I felt bad because last week we had to cancel out. So.
No, but that was the last minute. That was, like I said, I wanted to throw it out there just in case, you know, I did, you know, so no, that was, I'm just happy that we're able to do it right now. So.
Yeah. And I look forward to doing more, Chris, because, you know, we're on the same page, I think, on a lot of things.
A lot of stuff.
We have a lot of similar interests and we're both New England boys, so it only makes sense.
Yeah. And it's refreshing because a lot of this New England folklore and history, I don't really have a lot of people to talk about that with too, so.
Okay, well, here's something that's really interesting for the viewers and the listeners. I am descended from John Proctor, who was hung in the Salem witch trials.
Wow.
I don't know if I ever told you that. So I am a direct descendant. I'm like his eighth or ninth great-grandson. Wow. So, and we have all the genealogy to prove that.
You got to talk to my friend Gardner Goldsmith, right? Okay. I was actually a guest on his show, Liberty Conspiracy, last night, and I brought up the Puckwudgies and stuff. So when you said that, I was like, oh, did he see it? I'm like, no, Puckwudgies, because Gard had never heard of it. Like, he's in your neck of the woods. He's in New Hampshire.
Would love to get into contact with him, Chris. We'll make something happen. Maybe we can all get together and do a big, huge, like, panel show.
Oh, I would love to do that. But the reason I brought him up is because his family was among the first settlers of Salem, Massachusetts.
Okay, well, mine too. Like, my family came in 1641.
I don't know when his family, but I remember him mentioning that, though.
Yeah,
so actually, you guys will get along.
Actually, both sides of my mom's family came in 1641.
Wow.
They came on the same boat, but on a different trip. Yeah, so and we're talking about John Proctor, right? So my mom's a Proctor. My grandmother was a Proctor. You know, she grew up on the Proctor farm.
Right.
So my mom grew up on the Proctor farm too. So yeah, really cool family history. I'm starting to learn a lot more about it. My second cousin up in Albany has done all the genealogy and verified it all, actually through the Mormon church. And we have tons of documents. So so anytime you hear a John Proctor and you have any information about that, please reach out to me, because I am putting together a whole group of episodes about the Salem witch trials.
One more time with your email, because that's important if people have information for you.
Yeah, it's real simple. It's thewickedplanetpodcast@gmail.com.
Okay.
All right. Yep. Awesome. Yeah, and follow us at The Wicked Planet. Like, we're on all the platforms. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Amazon Music, Audible.com, iHeartRadio, Spotify.
And what about
really big on Spotify?
Your YouTube page too, right?
I have a YouTube page, but we're not active on it yet, because obviously we have to be careful about what we put on YouTube.
That's true. Yeah.
But we are working on building an actual studio so we can do live streams and people can watch us. And not that I'm trying to copycat anybody, but it's going to be very similar to how Joe Rogan does his.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
We're going to have a big long table. We're going to have multiple cameras. You're going to be able to, it's going to be a very, very top-notch production when it's done.
I can't wait. I can't wait for that too.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you will have to find some wheels and drive up, up and be in studio.
I would love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah. But anybody you want to get a hold of me, just go for it. I'm totally fine with that.
Oh, I enjoyed the hell out of this. And
yeah, and thank you for having me on, Chris, big time.
Thank you for having me on your show, too.
Yeah, hey, dude, that show's doing well.
I love hearing that.
That show is doing very well.
All right, well, could you just wait when I'm going to end the show right now, but I wanted to say goodbye to you off the air.
Yeah, cool, no problem.
All right, well, everyone, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I have. This is Ron Lane, Ron from New England, the Wicked Planet podcast. And till next time, have a good weekend, everybody.